Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 548. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, the season of gratitude is upon us. And even though many of us survived some torrential storms here in the Midwest on Sunday, we had some bizarre temperatures, and it is definitely fall. But we are heading into the season of harvest and festivities and Thanksgiving, and It's an exciting time of year. Lots going on as people prepare for the final days, the final months here of 2013. And we're really excited, too, to have so many wonderful shows coming up for you here. We're going to look back at the year as we do in December, the year in review with Windy City Times editor Andrew Davis. And also, I need to promote for my co-host, Scott Duff, is about to star in We Three Lies with About Face Theater at Stage 773. So much fun. And it's crazy. The Santaland Diaries, Mitchell Fain, celebrates his 10th year doing the wonderful one-man show based on David Sedaris's stories of working as an elf at Macy's in the Santaland Diaries with Theater Wit. The boys, Scott and Mitchell, will be next door to one another there on Belmont, and both are fantastic shows that I strongly encourage you to go see. It really gets me in the holiday spirit. And other things coming up for the holidays, the Nutcracker with the Joffrey and Christmas Carol, and oh my gosh, I'm going to see Wicked again, which I haven't seen in like 10 years as well. I mean, Wicked just celebrated its 10-year anniversary. I remember seeing it on Broadway with Idina Menzel and then Kristen Chenoweth, and then seeing it in Chicago when it premiered here with Anna Gasteyer. And I'm so excited to go back and see this very wonderful show and an amazing revival. So super, super fun all around. I love this time of year. And also because I'm going to get away and have a little bit of a tropical vacation myself here in the upcoming weeks. So that will be fun, and maybe I'll have some thoughts from my trip. But you know, it's really, really interesting when I feel like an old timer to being a part of the GLBT media now, have the opportunity to talk about something I haven't talked about, something new, a fresh perspective, or something that I have not had the privilege of having a conversation about. And today, I'm very excited, a very inspiring, insightful, compelling interview with Dr. Peter Hayes. He is the chair of the history department at Northwestern University, and he is going to be working, presenting a conversation at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, a world-class museum we have here in Skokie, Illinois, just north of downtown Chicago. And they are presenting an evening talking about anti-Semitism and homophobia in Nazi Germany. And this is really a compelling conversation. You know, how often have we seen what happened to the numbers of GLBT individuals during Nazi Germany, during the Holocaust, how they were impacted, their stories, and what was the reality of that war, that genocide on their lives before, during, and after the war? And how is it different from the other people who were persecuted, the other groups who were persecuted, killed, and had the echoes of that horrible time in our world's history? It's really a compelling and interesting conversation, and I'm so happy that Dr. Hayes is having it here with us first, just to kick off this exploration of the realities, the unique aspects for GLBT individuals, primarily gay men, during the Holocaust. And as I said before in a couple of shows before, when I was talking about Larry Kramer and the Normal Heart, how often the gay community, the community impacted with HIV and AIDS have been paralleled or have been a metaphor for invisibility and people not paying attention to a community, or persecuting a community, or treating a community as worthless or less than human or unworthy of attention and care, compassion, and how we are a part of the legacy of that type of invisibility. So it's a real, and dehumanization too. It's a really interesting interview. I'm excited to have it today with Dr. Peter Hayes. Also, I'm going to be telling you what's going on in the GLBT news and theater. And lastly, I want to tease and say we've got a wonderful holiday show kicking us off next week in time for the Thanksgiving holidays, leading us into Christmas, Kwanzaa, solstice, Hanukkah, and all of the holidays that we're about to start celebrating here in December. So, I'm excited about this show. I'm intrigued and excited and compelled, and I hope you are too. So enjoy.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. The Hawaii Senate voted to give final legislative approval to a bill allowing same-sex couples to obtain marriage licenses. Democratic Governor Neil Abercrombie signed the bill November 13th. It will take effect December 2nd, making Hawaii the 15th state, plus the District of Columbia, to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. The Illinois legislature passed its marriage equality bill before Hawaii, but Governor Pat Quinn will not sign the bill until November 20th. So Illinois law does not go into effect until June 1st, 2014.
Newly elected Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe has promised to sign two executive orders on the day he takes office in January, and one involves a statewide version of ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. McAuliffe said he will sign ENDA first to protect LGBT state employees from job discrimination.
A transgender woman will soon ask the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or LDS, to officially recognize her as a woman. Until last year, Leonora Isaac, 50, lived most of her life as Bob Isaac, who was married and had three daughters. She is a member of the LDS Church, but because she still appears on the church records as a man, she has asked to attend priesthood meetings instead of Relief Society meetings.
Ron Strauss of Doylestown defeated Republican opponent Bruce Rutherford to become Pennsylvania's first openly LGBT mayor. Strauss, 65, is a chef and manages two local restaurants and also chairs the Doylestown Human Relations Commission.
In Colorado, parents are up in arms over a recently implemented transgender bathroom policy at Florence High School. The school put in place a policy that allowed transgender students to use the bathroom associated with their preferred gender. The policy was implemented after requests by LGBT activists demanded such a policy.
Four same-sex couples filed a federal lawsuit in Boise challenging Idaho's laws that prohibit same-sex couples from marrying and refuse to acknowledge the legal marriages of same-sex couples who are married in other states. Three of the Boise couples are raising children.
The president of the American Bar Association was set to be the keynote speaker at a New York conference about investing in Russia. After pressures and entreaties from gay leaders, ABA President James Silkenot said he would not speak at the forum.
The U.S. Coast Guard has added protections based on sexual orientation to its equal opportunity policy, prompting new calls for the Pentagon to do the same with other branches of the military. The guidance says sexual orientation and genetic information are now included as part of equal opportunity and anti-discrimination, anti-harassment policy statements within the Coast Guard.
In South Carolina, hundreds of College of Charleston students held up signs, cheered, and chanted to show their support for guest Judy Shepherd, who urged equal treatment of gays and lesbians. Shepherd is the mother of Matthew Shepherd. Several hundred students packed the sidewalks outside the Stern Student Center. Messages had gone out on Facebook for support to counter an anti-gay rally outside the center.
A high school basketball coach in rural Rhode Island came out as transgender. Stephen Alexander, a basketball star as a teenager in northern Rhode Island, is now believed to be the first openly transgender high school coach in the U.S.
The United States House of Representatives unanimously passed the HIV Organ Policy Equity, or HOPE Act, a measure that allows individuals with HIV to receive organs from other HIV-positive donors. In June, the Senate passed the act, which eliminates longstanding regulations prohibiting the procurement of organs from HIV-positive people. President Barack Obama is expected to sign the measure into law. Currently, if a dead individual is found to have HIV, he or she is eliminated from consideration.
Missouri will become the first state to recognize same-sex marriages for tax purposes, even though it has a state constitutional amendment limiting marriage to one man and one woman. Democratic Governor Jay Nixon said he would issue an executive order directing the Missouri Department of Revenue to accept joint tax returns from all married couples, including same-sex couples married in other states.
In world news, in a landmark case, a Turkish man is suing his former employer after being fired for his sexual orientation. In 2009, soccer referee Halil Ibrahim Dincak, 36, refused to perform a mandatory 15 months of military service. After telling military officers he's gay, Dincak received an official medical report saying he had a psychosexual disorder. According to the Turkish Football Federation, anyone who is barred from military service for health reasons cannot work as a referee.
Lawmakers in Mexico's western state of Jalisco have approved a change in the state's constitution that legalizes same-sex civil unions. The law provides gay couples with numerous social benefits similar to those of married couples. Jalisco is a conservative and staunchly Roman Catholic state that is home to Mexico's second largest city, Guadalajara.
Zambia's First Lady, Dr. Christine Kaseva Sata, called for an end to discrimination against sexual minorities. Kaseva Sata's remarks came a few days after another renowned doctor and HIV activist, Manasseh Firi, championed gay rights at Evelyn Hone College.
The European Court of Justice ruled that three gay men must be granted refugee status in the Netherlands, paving the way for other gay and lesbian people to seek asylum in nations within the EU. The three gay men from Sierra Leone, Uganda, and Senegal each sought refuge status in Holland, citing persecution in their homelands for being openly gay. The ruling could also have implications for LGBT people from other nations with laws criminalizing an LGBT identity who want to seek asylum in the EU, including Russia.
In entertainment news, singer Sia will donate the money she earned from Beautiful Pain, a track she recorded with Eminem for his latest LP, the Marshall Mathers LP 2, to the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center. Her decision follows her fans scrutinizing her collaboration with Eminem after it was revealed the rapper uses anti-gay slurs on the album.
The fourth season of Downton Abbey hasn't even arrived in the U.S., but a fifth season is already on the way. The show's fourth season recently completed its run in the U.K. It drew 11.8 million average viewers, making it Britain's highest-rated television drama this year. More than 24 million viewers watched the third season of the series in the U.S., making it PBS's most-watched drama ever.
Transgender actress Laverne Cox co-stars in the movie Musical Chairs, directed by Susan Seidelman of Desperately Seeking Susan. A film set in a world of competitive ballroom dancing tells the story of a pair of unlikely lovers in contemporary New York. The film runs November 15th through 28th on HBO Latino and December 12th through 18th on HBO Signature.
Family Ties star Meredith Baxter is set to marry her longtime girlfriend as the actress obtained a marriage license from a Beverly Hills, California courthouse to wed her partner, Nancy Locke. Baxter was married three times before, announcing that she was a lesbian in 2009.
Maulik Pancholi, an actor who co-starred on the NBC show 30 Rock, has come out of the closet. The 39-year-old actor made the magazine's annual Out 100 list and told the publication, "I just celebrated my 9-year anniversary with my partner." Pancholi has played gay characters on Weeds and Whitney, but the 2013 interview marks the first time he's spoken about it publicly.
FX is set to premiere the show Chosen. Voiced by SNL's Bobby Moynihan, Chosen is a gay white rapper who returns to the real world after getting out of prison. Chosen will premiere Monday, January 13th.
And Lifetime is further expanding the Project Runway franchise with Under the Gun, a 13-episode new fashion series starring Project Runway co-host Tim Gunn. The new show, which premieres January 16th, does not mean a departure from the runway. This marks the third Project Runway offshoot on Lifetime, including Project Runway All-Stars, now in its third season, and Project Accessory, which ran for one cycle. And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Tires.
Hey! Hey, everyone! It's Judy Gold. And I know you know this already, but you're on the Windy City Queercast. Don't leave.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 18th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Three distinguished Chicago actors bring to life Irish playwright Conor McPherson's exploration of three generations of Irishmen in Port Authority, now playing at Writers Theatre. The interlocking stories of three men at different stages of life weave together a tale that is both spirited and moving in its portrait of the most remarkable ordinary lives. Chicago favorite William Brown directs in the Writers Theatre Bookstore space, a setting so intimate you'll feel a part of the conversation. For tickets to Port Authority, visit writerstheater.org.
She's back and better than ever. About Face Theater's queer hit holiday musical, We Three Lizas, runs November 27th through January 5th at Stage 773. Boxmaker Conrad Ticklebottom's life has hit a stumbling block when three magical figures arrive at his door, a trio of Liza Minnellis, to escort him on a fabulous journey through what was, what could be, and what the heck. It's a darkly, sparkly musical spinning a tale of hope and transformation and the power of Liza. Visit Stage 773 to get your tickets to We Three Lizas today.
Timeline Theater Company has another formidable production, says the Chicago Tribune, about The Normal Heart, Larry Kramer's landmark drama about the AIDS crisis. The Chicago Sun-Times calls The Normal Heart breathtaking, and Time Out Chicago awards it 5 stars. Don't wait to get tickets to The Normal Heart in a limited stage run at Stage 773. Visit timelinetheater.com.
The Tony Award-winning Miss Saigon comes to Aurora from the creators of Les Miserables comes this passionate story of love, loss, war, and family. Filled with intense imagery and unforgettable orchestrations, experience what critics have called better than Broadway. Miss Saigon at Paramount Theater. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. Miss Saigon is playing now through November 24th.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Well, I have been recording interviews, podcasting, on the radio, talking to LGBT people for over a decade and a half now. That's a little scary. But in all of that time, it's rare that I have a topic that I think I haven't talked about that on the air before. And the opportunity came for me to speak with Dr. Peter Hayes, who's a noted Holocaust scholar, the chair of the history department at Northwestern University, and has his own chair around the topic of the Holocaust at the university. And he is going to be shedding light on a rare subject of the Holocaust, exploring anti-Semitism and homophobia in Nazi Germany, commonalities and differences, on Thursday, December 5th at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. And I'm just really honored to sit and talk with him about this moment in our history that is so impactful, and about LGBT people who were silenced and also unrecognized for many years. It has taken time for gays to come to light as victims in this atrocity. So I'm very honored to have Dr. Hayes with us. Hey, how are you, Dr. Hayes?
Just fine, thank you, Amy.
Now, you are the chair of a special chair on the Holocaust. Tell us about that department chair.
Well, the chair's been around since, I think about 1998 or 99. It was given by a group of donors here in Chicago who were closely associated with a foundation that was headquartered in Skokie called the Holocaust Educational Foundation. And the chair was named after the man who really had been the driving and founding spirit of that organization, a man named Zev Weiss. So it has the chair has a very long name, the Theodore Zev Weiss Holocaust Educational Foundation Professorship.
Well,
quite a mouthful.
It's wonderful, too, that people have given financial support to make sure that the history and these stories come to life, because I know the Pfeffer Family Forum is helping provide the opportunity to speak on this topic as well at the Holocaust Museum here in Illinois. Can you talk briefly, and I know this is a loaded question, but just really briefly, just to give us the bullet points on the rise of the Nazi Party, the spread of anti-Semitism, when did that start? And what is that moment in our history from which we begin this conversation?
Well, the Nazi Party was founded in 1920 and had a brief moment of success in 1923 when Hitler tried to march on the government in Munich and overthrow the state government and then march on the national government in Berlin. But that was the Beerhof Putsch, and it was a bust. He was sent to jail for a little while, and the party was not quiescent, but pretty small and not very significant during most of the 1920s. In 1928, the Nazis got 2.6% of the national vote. So they weren't doing terribly well on the themes that they emphasized the most. But then in 1929, the Depression struck. Germany was hit harder by the Depression than any other country in the world except the United States. And as a result, the Nazi Party began to jump by the vote began to jump by leaps and bounds. So they went from 2.6% of the vote in 1928 to a little over 18% in 1930, then 37% in 1932. And then at the end of 1932, there was a second election, and they actually lost votes. They fell back to about 33%. But the political situation was so stalemated, and no one could command the majority in parliament. So a small group of people, very influential, mostly highly conservative, very wealthy, lobbied the president of the republic, a man named Paul von Hindenburg, and persuaded him to appoint Hitler chancellor. And so Hitler came to power in a kind of backroom deal. He was picked because he had more votes in parliament than anyone else, but he did not have a majority. And in fact, when Hitler came into power in 1933, probably about 55% of the Germans, maybe more, had never voted for him. Mm. So he was, in that sense, the expression of an extreme political movement, but not yet a majority political movement.
Yes. What would have been the view on homosexuality at this time in Europe, in Germany? Because I think we have to kind of start there to where it goes.
Sure. It varied a lot from country to country. For instance, in France, there had never been legal prohibitions or criminalization of homosexual sex acts prior to the Second World War. It's actually, in France, the introduction of criminalization of at least gay male sex began in 1942. It began under the German occupation. Mm-hmm. In Germany, on the other hand, there was a paragraph 175 of the Criminal Code, which was passed in 1871, and that criminalized male homosexual acts. It did not criminalize female homosexual acts. And so they were illegal under German law from 1871 until the time that the Nazis came in 1933. Though the laws were very erratically enforced, and particularly in the years after World War One, the years of the so-called Weimar Republic, there was a vigorous, active, vibrant gay culture in Berlin. People were not getting arrested. Clubs weren't getting raided in the way that was happening in some American cities at that time. But then once the Nazis came in, the enforcement of the code became very strict very fast.
Yes. So looking at the rise of the Nazi Party and the time when Jews and homosexuals and others were being targeted and gathered, was it only gay men? Were lesbians included in those targets?
Not to the same degree. The Nazis went after gay men much more, partly because the legislation permitted them to do it. Mm-hmm. They went after gay women in exceptional cases under different, if you will, auspices. That is, women were sometimes arrested because they, and this is an odd, I'm translating from the German, they offended the healthy popular feeling. This was the German phrase of the time. And they were then grouped as asocial. Okay. That is, their behavior was somehow, you know, not the conformity that the Nazi state expected. But most women were not subjected to persecution by the Nazis for gay sex. It was largely an attack on men. Mm-hmm. And even the attack on men was very odd in the sense that while the regime officially condemned all gay male acts, the organization that was designed to suppress them was called an Organization for the Suppression of Homosexuality and Abortion. And that office title gives you an idea of what it was that agitated the Nazis. It was non-procreation.
Okay.
What they were concerned about was people's behavior. And if you don't multiply the race and make the German nation stronger and stronger, then you are offending against the traditions of the people, and that's why they're subject to persecution. So the motive for attacking gay men was very different from the motive for attacking Jews. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the number of gay men they attacked was actually not universal. The Nazis themselves estimated that there were about 2 million gay men in Germany in 1933. The total number of people they ever arrested on so-called morals charges is 100,000. The number of people who get jailed is, I think, fewer than 50,000. And so they did a very selective prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for this was because Hitler was obsessed with Jews, but he wasn't obsessed with gay people. Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, mm-hmm. was the one who was obsessed with gay people.
Talk to me about his dedication to that, because this is a very fascinating story, Himmler, throughout this time in the Nazi regime and his end.
Himmler's the driving implementer of the Holocaust and the persecution of almost all the groups that the Nazis targeted. On subjects of sex, Himmler was himself a pretty active heterosexual. He thought that was so much the natural norm that he actually thought gay people were curable. And one of the reasons why he did not round up every gay in Germany and so forth is he thought the only ones who were really dangerous are the ones that he called incorrigible. They couldn't be fixed. He was a real believer that there was such a thing as reparative therapy,
mm-hmm.
and that most gay men could be cured.
Mm-hmm.
And so he therefore decided that the only ones who should be subjected to the full power of the Nazi state, which meant concentration camps and in some cases castration,
mm-hmm.
those people were the people who were repeat offenders.
Mm-hmm.
So the SS had to catch you several times, and then it felt that it was time to put you in a camp. But if it didn't catch you several times, And then one other thing.
It's interesting, right? Because this is an idea that still exists today. Reparative therapy, absolutely. And this theory, this theory that now state by state, states are having to say, you know, it is illegal for therapists and psychologists, psychiatrists to utilize conversion therapy on LGBT youth and LGBT individuals. Is it true that homosexuals, based on what you're discussing then, would have been treated in a more cruel or a less cruel manner? It sounds like I know scientific experiments was a huge part of what went on within the Nazi Party, and scientific experimentation. You mentioned castration, chemical castration. I mean, I guess it's splitting hairs whether this is more cruel or less cruel, but it's definitely one of, with your topic, commonalities and differences. It seems that this group would have been in that category of being shepherded into scientific experimentation. That could probably lend itself to being quite horrific.
It would have been plausible if they hadn't been so sure that being gay is not an inborn condition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really believed that gay people were people who somehow had been turned in that direction. And that's the assumption that, of course, makes repair therapy plausible. If you don't believe that gay people are born that way, then you believe that they can be fixed in some way. And since the SS did believe that, they didn't torture people in a search for a scientific basis for what they were. They believed that what they were was either extremely twisted by some early life experience or fixable.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't do that. Now, what they did do to gay men in particular, and you know, there are a number of accounts of this that have survived, and I'm not sure I'm going to say them to you over the radio, but they worked out really awful ways of torturing gay men, mm-hmm. and that were specific to being a gay male. And in the cellars of the SS, this happened. So to the way your question started, if the Nazis got and kept their hands on you and you were a gay male, the fate was terrible. But there were ways of, in the early stages of arrest, there were ways of wriggling out of it if you were a gay male. Mm-hmm. Whereas, of course, for Jews, there were almost no ways to wriggle out.
Right.
And there it was much more thoroughgoing.
Yes.
So, now, and then the other thing to recognize is it's very different inside or outside of Germany. The Germans really didn't care if you were a gay Polish male unless you were having sex with a German male. Otherwise, they did not run raids in Warsaw and try to ferret out gay clubs and so on and so forth. They didn't much care in any other occupied territory. They actually toyed with applying paragraph 175 to occupied Poland and decided against it.
Mm-hmm.
So they really were just interested in making sure that German men produced German offspring and German men behaved the way they thought men should behave. And otherwise, they were kind of indifferent.
Would homosexual men have been contained together with Jewish prisoners, or would they have been isolated? And would they have suffered any kind of homophobia from Jewish, Jewish prisoners?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gay men occupied the bottom of the totem pole in concentration camps. And they were identified by a particular color on the pink triangle on their uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were really at the bottom of the heap. And there are instances in which, as is often in concentration camps, there was situations in which people are being chosen for the what was called Himmelfahrtskommandos, which basically is an ascension brigade, ascension as in a religious sense. You're going up to heaven. And gays were often chosen for those before anybody else. They had very little protection from other prisoners, whereas People who were in camps for all kinds of reasons, sometimes for racial reasons like Jews, sometimes for political reasons, sometimes because they were just common criminals who'd been convicted five times and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The criminals and the political people were at the top of the heap, and they took care of each other. And then the Jews tended to be down toward the bottom and the gays at the very bottom.
Do we have numbers on how many homosexuals perished?
We've got numbers. We're not sure how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
About 6,000 gay men died in concentration camps of about 10,000 who were sent to concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
So the mortality rate was 60%.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a very small share of the 2 million, according to Nazi estimates, of gay men in Germany. So what they wanted to do was to drive you back into the closet so far that you couldn't see out.
Right.
And
obviously we're not accounting for any prisoners or victims who would have been Jewish and gay, you know, who probably,
exactly.
If you were
exactly.
Jewish, it was the offense, as you're saying, there was not a lot of wiggle room out. And it's just interesting, too, because after the war, you know, there's a lot of story here, too, of the homophobia and anti-Semitism, you know, for the country, because after the war, when Jewish people were not criminalized after the war, they were somehow, you know, definitely had to rebuild from everything and an enormous struggle and an enormous loss to the community. Gay people were still still criminals, according to their sexual acts.
Yeah, the German state recognized the incarceration of gays in the Third Reich as legitimate right up until the time that Germany repealed the laws against gay sex, which is about 1968.
Yeah.
So it was impossible, for instance, mm-hmm. for a German gay man who had been put in a concentration camp to get any restitution for that.
Right.
He couldn't even get the minimum payments for unlawful imprisonment,
mm-hmm.
whereas German Jews who survived were able to, if they had been in camps, they were able to get 150 marks a day for unlawful imprisonment, but they also could apply for restitution of their property and so on.
Mm. Yeah, it's just this horrible, you know, there's the indignities and the atrocities, and then there is the you don't exist, which kind of seems to be the theme around the homophobia that exists, it has taken so long to decriminalize. It has taken so long to have memorials or remembrances or know that they were a part, even if they were a small part in a percentage wise. We also are a smaller part of the community than Jews in Germany would have been. It's
right.
just based on sheer numbers. Right.
But,
you know, I just saw the play The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer that's running here in Chicago through the end of the year. It's fantastic. And it is about the early days in the early 80s, about the AIDS crisis. And it's pretty biographical for Larry Kramer about his starting of ACT UP. And you know, it's really interesting because he referenced in the play last night, you know, and was noted often at this time, in the middle of this epidemic, this pandemic, this atrocity that he saw that no one was responding to, you know, he referenced the Holocaust, he referenced the Nazis, and the role that a genocide plays and turning a blind eye. And I thought that was so powerful, right?
Yeah, the common element is invisibility.
Yes.
The common element is invisibility, that it was just regarded as something that didn't have anything to do with anyone else.
Right.
And so it's purely a matter of the community. And, you know, the other thing is it wasn't just Germany. After the French passed a law in 1942, the collaborationist government passed a law against that criminalized gay male sex. They didn't unpass that law until the 1970s. It took them 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because, as you said, in Europe, country by country, it differed. And just recently, in the past couple of years, you know, the attempts to pardon Alan Turing, who was instrumental in his analysis and his cracking the code, so to speak, of helping bringing down the Nazi regime. You know, this gay British man who, you know, suffered all kinds of horrible attempts at reparative and therapy and castration and all of these things to, you know, lose his life, to take his life at 41, you know, is now one of the icons and one of the faces that is now becoming visible, the names that is becoming visible to LGBT people who we don't know our history. Like, that's why I think this conversation you're going to have on December the 5th at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center is so important, because we need to be educated, because we were there and no one knows we were there. Right. And I know that's always, You know, I've always heard that, a big part of the Holocaust is to remember that it happened, that this did happen. Do not forget. We will not forget. But we're not forgetting something we don't even know about,
Yeah.
And it's profound. It's a profound reason to have art and education and history and lectures and one person talking to another person continue to start to tell these stories, not even really continue, but to start telling these stories. And I'm assuming you feel the same way. It's been a life's mission for you.
Well, I mean, what is really important is all of this illustrates, the historical ignorance illustrates the importance of what Harvey Milk said. You have to be out. Mm-hmm. People have to be out because no one thinks of other groups of people as real unless they can see the other groups of people.
Yeah.
And there's no empathy with people who are invisible. And so I think that's the most important thing to reference with regard to this. And that's how great, that's the most important thing that has changed since period of time and now.
Yeah. There are now, the movie and play Bent did a lot for showing, highlighting this story. I believe a very small but really well-executed lesbian film, Amy and Jaguar, beautiful, beautiful film on this time period and the story of two women in love. So it is up. It sometimes is up to our artists and our storytellers to tell these stories so that we get to know them. Now, how are there are some memorials today, though, right? I mean, it seems now that I have, besides Illinois, I've also visited the Holocaust Museum in D.C., which is also a brilliant education center. I mean, I don't know if it's called an education center, but a brilliant way to really get to know in a tactile way more about the Holocaust. And it seems like there are starting to be opportunities for whether they're markers in certain places. Are you seeing that it is being honored more and more and remembered and included in the story?
The Holocaust in general, surely, but the number of specific monuments to gay people who were caught up in it is pretty limited. There is one at the Wittenbergplatz in Berlin, but it's right in a neighborhood that was a gay neighborhood in the 1920s, and in fact still is. In fact, it still is kind of center of gay male life in what used to be West Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can find, but it's a small monument of a pink triangle on the side of a train station, and it's not big and conspicuous. Whereas you can hardly go anywhere in Berlin without now running into various forms of monuments to the deportation of the Jews. I mean, there are underground stations that have the names of all the shops that were in the area surrounding them that were closed by the Nazis. There are what are called Stolpersteine, which are basically cobblestones that have the names of people who used to live in the neighborhood. There's a neighborhood called the Bavarian Quarter in Berlin where all the street signs have, above where it says the name of the street, it gives the name of some law that was passed against Jews under the Nazi regime.
Mm.
So there's a kind of ubiquitous commemoration of the Holocaust. There's a less strong recognition of the degree to which gays were impacted by it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's there. And certainly, the level of consciousness in Germany is high. We don't yet have gay marriage in Germany like we do in France, and Spain, and Holland, and Portugal, and so forth. But it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's a certain amount of progress.
Yes.
Progress is never fast enough. But,
yes.
There it is.
Well, and I think of Germany as a place that GLBT, living is the best way, right? To have change, as you said, the Harvey Milk quote, live out proud. And I do feel like Germany has a strong LGBT community. They have, it is a well-traveled place by LGBT people around the world. And it's always exciting to see a country like Germany have that after something in their history. I feel the same way about South Africa, to be a country that had such persecution and to be the first country, to have same-sex marriage.
Right.
And it being an African country is amazing. So I really hope people will take the opportunity to join in this examination and conversation and topic of the Holocaust and the anti-Semitism and homophobia in Nazi Germany, the commonalities and differences with Dr. Peter Hayes at the fantastic Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie, Illinois. That's at 9603 Woods Drive. There's tons of information we'll have linked in our show notes about the museum. And if you're listening to this and you're not, don't live in the Chicago area, it's definitely a great place to stop when you visit the Chicago area. We'll have their website linked, Illinois Holocaust Museum.org. But they do would like reservations for this event on December 5th from 6 to 8. So please email reservations at ilhmec.org. We will also have that email linked in our notes, reservations at ilhmec.org. And Dr. Hayes, I really appreciate you having this conversation. It's been quite compelling, and I look forward to it continuing.
My pleasure, Amy. Thanks much.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I want to tell you that I can't wait for next week's show. I really hope you will be as excited as I am as the lights start being sprinkled around Chicago, the decorations being hung, big meals being had by friends and family, drinks and hors d'oeuvres as holiday parties begin. And nothing better to kick that off than holiday music. And David Edelfelt, an amazing singer and artist around Chicago, is launching a holiday CD. And I'll be talking with David about that in our next show. So we're going to have some seasons, some carols and seasons, sounds of the seasons for you on our next podcast. I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful week. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.